You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to episode 142 of Irk FM. Irk FM is my music podcast that comes down the pipe and into your ears each and every Friday. But today we have a special guest on the line from Skype. It's Tuesday, so it's interview time again. We have musician and podcaster and fellow member of the Association of Music Podcasting, Nick Tan. Are you on? Nick Tan, hello.
This thing is on, Irk. How are you?
Good, mate. How are you?
Oh, I'm a bit tired, actually. We've had the clocks go forward over here. Do you have the clocks go forward over there? Or is it just a stupid idea?
We're the opposite, mate. As we're recording this interview, we're going back on the weekend.
Oh, right, okay.
So for the moment, at least, we're both on summertime. How does that work?
Okay. Cool.
But then again, I'm at the end of my summertime, and you're at the start of yours. So I understand the jet lag feeling.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a jet lag thing, isn't it?
Welcome to my world of being a shift worker.
I know. It's a hard life, mate.
It is. But you've been very, very busy lately. Not only are you a music podcaster, and we'll talk about that very soon, but you're also a musician, and you have a new project, which is very, very interesting considering that it's 2011 and you're talking about vinyl. What's the story?
Well, actually, you say it's a new thing. It's actually a bit of an old thing. I started it in 2009 and I wanted to record an album and I was chatting to a friend of mine. You know Matt Stevens?
Oh, yeah, we've had Matt on the show. He's a good friend of the show.
Yeah, he was a good friend of mine. And we were sort of chatting and saying, oh, yeah, well, I've get an album together. And he was saying, what I didn't want to happen was I've got some friends of mine in the past that went and recorded an album, spent truckloads of money on it, and a couple of years later, they've got a whole garage full of CDs. And I didn't want that to happen. So what I thought, well, what myself and Matt came up with this idea of getting people to pre-order an album, and that way, if they can pay for it beforehand, then obviously I can. Once I've got enough money for it, I can go and record it, and they get an album. So everybody's happy.
So how did you go about getting people to pre-order?
Well, basically, I just blogged about it. I tweeted about it. I've got a mailing list. And so I sent a big mailing list out, and I put a thing out on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. And the new project started, really. I got fortunate enough to get a manager late last year, and one of the things that we were talking about, and he said, oh, this vinyl project, Nick, how's it going? I said, well, I've got some money for it. He said, why not go and record it? But anyway, let me just tell you about let me just go back a little bit and talk a bit about the why vinyl. One of the things I wanted to do, I wanted to make it a little bit different than just, you know, pay some money, I'll go and record an album. Because, like, well, anyone can go and record an album, really. It's nothing spectacular about that. So what I thought I'd do is try and make it a little bit more nichey and just record it on vinyl. I know we're in 2011, but people are still making vinyl. People are making little releases, other releases on vinyl. And then I thought, well, I've only got a certain amount of money. I could see how the money was coming in, and it wasn't rolling in. Let me be honest with you. It wasn't rolling in. It was kind of trickling in, and I had a certain amount of money. And so I thought, well, what I need to do is to maximise the money that I've got. and the studio time that I'm going to get. So the best thing to do will be to go and record it live. So I needed to go and record between 30 and 40 minutes live. So I thought, well, that's kind of a short gig, really. So why don't I just go into the studio, get loads of really nice microphones, and go and get into a really nice studio with a great engineer, and just record it all live. So that way, I only had to spend enough money just to basically get set up, and then record it. And I went and recorded it on the 5th of March with Kevin Feasey, who is the guy that recorded Matt Stevens' album, and both his albums, actually, and Sonny. Did you know Sonny at all?
The name rings a bell.
Right, okay. Well, he's kind of in the same sort of stable as Matt Stevens. Just went and did it at the Livingston Studios in Wood Green in North London, sunny North London, which is quite an amazing place. A lot of people recorded out. Who's recorded there? Bjork recorded debut there, and the Magic Numbers have recorded their album there. And it's quite an interesting little studio, because on the outside it just looks like a scout hut, because it was a scout hut at the back of a shopping centre. But when you go through the side door, you realise there's actually three beautiful studios, grand pianos and organs and things like that, and lots of lovely microphones.
So was the intention to go vinyl from as soon as you had the idea, or just to clarify, the vinyl sort of came later?
The vinyl kind of was there from the beginning. I think the live element of it, that kind of that developed as I saw how much money was coming in. And I thought, well, to get a whole day's recording, to get 8 songs, it's gonna take a few different days, maybe a whole week to get it perfect, you know? So I thought I'd just do something a little bit different. I had this picture in my head of Count Basie and Frank Sinatra recording in the 50s, just with a couple of microphones and a few friends around. And that's basically what I did, minus obviously Frank Sinatra and whoever I just mentioned. I can't remember. It's far too late.
And it's not the 1950s anymore, Toto.
And it's not the 1950s, although it will be released on vinyl. So basically it's done. It's recorded. I went and did it, and Kevin also mastered it for me and cut it into available tracks. And now the people that have donated the money so far and pre-ordered, they will be getting, as soon as I get my A into G, a CD of it. That beep is my BlackBerry. It's just about to die on me.
I thought you were just about to have a bomb explode or something. It was like a scene in Mission Impossible.
BlackBerry's been on all day. Where was I before that untimely?
You've got a CD coming out for the people who have subscribed.
That's right. So there's a CD for the people that subscribe, because I don't know when I'm going to get the vinyl cut, when I'm going to get any more money, because basically the recording session and the subsequent mastering and mixing and mastering took all the money I had in the coffers. So I've been getting a little bit of extra money in. I've got somebody quite good doing the sleeve design, but that's going to be a while. Lots of things are kind of waiting on other different things, and there's a strange thing going on. There's a chance that I can get a feature in a classic rock magazine, but it's dependent on the person actually designing the record artwork. So basically, the more publicity I get, the more money I get, the sooner the album's going to get pressed. But from my point of view, the tricky stuff, the actual recording of it live, that's done. So I'm like, oh right, okay, I've done my bit of hard work, as far as a musician's concerned.
So the live bit of it, was that any different because you were doing it on vinyl? Was that a complication?
Not really. No, I think from the point of the actual production of it, instead of it being a fade out at the end of each track, as normally people you'd normally fade a track out, it's a dead cut. So when it goes to vinyl, it goes to that dead cut. Then you've got the silence bit where the little bit in between the tracks is, and then it starts again. But other than that, I don't think there's anything. Kevin did say he did mix it slightly with a slightly different edge to it, but it started to get technical then, and I must admit I sort of drift off when it gets a little bit too technical.
So was it hard to find some, or has it been hard to find someone that will actually press the vinyl for you?
No, there's still plenty of places around. I've been in touch with a few places that have given me quotes. So there's still plenty of places around. There's still people that go and get their CDs pressed onto vinyl. Like people that own CDs, they'll go and get them pressed onto vinyl because they love vinyl so much, which is a bit crazy, I think.
Is that a bit of a surprise? When was the last time you would have played some vinyl?
Oh, well, I've got plenty of vinyl. But I used to do a bit of beat mixing, DJ beat mixing, not sort of with vinyl, with, you know, twin decks, all that kind of thing. I used to be into UK garage quite a bit in a former life. So I used to do a bit of beat mixing then and teaching people how to mix between records and all that kind of thing. But I've still got plenty of vinyl. The thing about vinyl is you can get some really interesting stuff from charity shops. And it's not just the vinyl or the material itself. It's the sleeve designs are just amazing. I've got some stuff that's awful music, but I've just bought because the sleeve design looks nice.
Let's talk a bit about the sleeve design. In the age of quote-unquote modern music where you've got things like digital downloads, you don't have to put a lot of effort into it in comparison to CD covers and sleeve designs. Have you been mucking around having some fun with the sleeve designs and also the little bit and the little bit of the record? What do you call the middle bit?
The label. No, well, I'm hoping that, I know that the guy's actually doing the design himself. So I like to, if someone's going to do something for me, I like to kind of leave them to do their own thing as far as that's concerned. I'm hoping that, I know this guy, there's a very good cartoonist, professional cartoonist friend of mine, whose name I won't mention at the moment because I don't know if he wants me to mention it yet. Probably best not to mention it at the moment. He's going to do the artwork. The inside part of the back part of the sleeve will be a lot of the photographs that are taken on the day. I'm lucky enough to have some very useful friends. I've got a friend of mine called I can't remember his bloody name. Sorry, people that know me know I'm dreadful with names. John Wilson, who's a professional photographer, very, very good photographer, is a friend of mine and came and took some pictures on the day. So I'll be using some of his pictures, some of which you can already see on my website. I've put that up already. So he'll be doing that. And then there'll also be a space for all the people that have contributed money and that have pre-ordered their album. Their name will go on the... their name will also go on the credits for the album. So that part of it's kind of taken up. The thing is, when it's like this, when I'm doing it all myself, I can make my own rules. There are websites that you can go onto. I think Sonic Bids is one of them, where you can go on there and say, like, we want to raise a certain amount of money to make this album, and people go on that website and they'll donate certain amounts of money. But I didn't want to do that because you have to stick to their format, to whatever the website, however the website works. And if you wanted to change your mind halfway through and go, well, actually, let's do it like this, like I did last year, I said, let's just do it live. That makes a lot of sense. So I can do what I like with it. So, yeah, I might come up with some other different ideas as we get closer to pressing. Maybe even get some pictures of the people that have contributed to it. Maybe have their picture on the back. I don't know, maybe a little message from them or something, whatever. So that sort of design of it is kind of taken care of, except for I don't know what the design's going to look like, but I'm quite excited to see. I'm actually excited to see what's going to be on the label of the album.
That's absolutely awesome. So you've got people who have already contributed. Is it too late for anyone who wants to contribute now?
Not at all. No, it's not too late at all. I haven't got enough money. I'm not even close to having enough money to press it onto vinyl yet. So it took me just over a year to get enough money to print it onto, to actually go and do the recording. And people were quite surprised, like when I emailed back and said, look, you know, I'm actually going to record it now. You know, that 10, because each album is, to pre-order it, it costs £10. So for that £10, you do also get a CD, and you also get access to a special password only a special page on my website that you have to put a password into that I give you once you paid your money, where you can actually see the tracks and there's some more pictures up there and stuff. So it could be another year or so until I've got enough money to press it onto vinyl. So no, there's plenty of time. There's plenty of time to get involved.
But in the meantime, of course, we do have the CD and we do have one of the tracks that we should play now. Give some people some idea about you, just in case they haven't heard me mention you on IRC FM before. Why don't we chuck in 3 AM? Tell us a story about 3 AM.
Okay, I wrote 3 AM a few years ago, and a friend of mine. Well, like I say, when I play, all the songs I write about are about other people, or about myself, or I just make them up. But this is about a couple of friends of mine. One that was just starting a relationship. The girl had just come out of a relationship, and she was starting a new relationship with a guy called Craig. And the guy she'd just come out of a relationship was one of Craig's best friends. So there was a period of time when it was, she'd just come out, they were just getting together, it was all a little bit, ooh, you know, let's keep things a little bit quiet, you know, keep things a little bit secretive, and of course keep things a little bit exciting. So, oh no, sorry, I'm actually describing the wrong song.
No! Oh no.
I'm describing How Can It Be Wrong, which isn't even on the album. I'm describing it wrong. Right, this song.
That song sounded good. I was getting into that.
That's called How Can It Be Wrong. That's on my last album before last.
So how can we get that song if we've intrigued people?
Just go onto my website. Go on to nicktan.co.uk. All the links to the albums are on there. Or you can go to nicktan.bandcamp.com. Anyway, look, 3 AM, I basically made the whole story up about a guy who's leaving, it's a classic story. A guy who's leaving his wife, woman, girlfriend, or whatever. I just wanted to paint a picture. Just wanted to paint a picture of a scene, of a thing that was happening for a moment in time. And I hope I've captured it.
All right. What we should do, we should play both songs now that you've talked the first one up especially. So why don't you introduce both songs?
Okay. Which one are you going to play first?
We'll play the one that you described so well, and then you go, oh, that's the wrong song.
Okay, well, this one's going to be How Can It Be Wrong?
Look in the mirror. What do I see? Look through the window. Staring back at me. 2 in the morning, I'm feeling so free, 24 hours, what a place to be. Well, how can it be wrong when it feels so right? Well, how can it be wrong in the day or night? Well, how can it be wrong when it feels so right? Well, how can it be wrong? Coming to meet me underneath the stars this time together. Last 1,000 hours and hours, say that it's over. Never meet again, you gotta remember. Still my special friend. Well, how can it be wrong when it feels so right? How can it be wrong in the day or night? Well, how can it be wrong when it feels so right? Well, how can it be wrong? Still can't believe it. It's a mystery, it just kind of happened. Being you and me, who would have thought it? But it's plain to see I'm loving the good times. The rest is history. Well, how can it be wrong when it's it feels so right. How can it be wrong in the day or night? How can it be wrong when it feels so right? Well, how can it be wrong? Well, how can it be wrong when it feels so right? How can it be wrong in the day or night? Well, how can it be wrong when it feels so right? How can it be wrong, wrong?
Just ain't right, but you never met too many people in a love affair. So many years and he's no show. Time to tell him how to pack his things and go. Just ain't right, but you never met too many people in a love affair. So many years and he's no show. Time to tell him how to pack his things and go. Just ain't right. You never there. Too many people in a love affair. So many years and he's no show. Time to tell him how to pack his things and go.
And this one is called 3 AM and it's off my new vinyl project.
You're not home. Gonna pack my bags, I'm gone. You see my destination written in a magazine. It's 3 AM, rain's coming down. Got the water on the ground beneath my feet. I'll walk calmly out of town. Heaven, take me, you never break me. Heaven, take me. Heaven, take me. You'll never break me. Heaven, take me. Stars are out. I hear the taxi driver shout. Grab my phone, grab my keys and a little cash. The streets are cold and I'm so alone. My head is heavy, I'm a little stoned. I've got nothing but my soul and some dignity. Heaven, take me, you'll never break me. Heaven, take me. No, no. Heaven, take me, you'll never break me. Heaven, take me. Have the good times and you threw them all away. You just don't even care. Time's a wasting, but time's a fool. Never going back, never going back there. You're not home. Gonna pack my bags, I'm gone. You see my destination written in a magazine. 3 a.m. and you're not home. Heard my message on the phone. That's the last time that you ever hear from me. Heaven, take me. You'll never break me. Heaven, take me. No, no. Heaven, take me. You'll never break me. Heaven, take me. No, no. Heaven, heaven, no. Heaven, a little bit of heaven. Heaven, take me. No. Heaven, heaven, no. Heaven,
3 a.m., you're not home.
You're listening to Oak FM episode 142, and that was a rather unexpected Nick Tan double play. I was expecting 3 a.m, but I got another bonus song as well. And there's also a video, Nick.
Yeah, Matt Stevens brought along a little flip camera, and it's all recorded on HD. So he's recorded all the video. And what I will probably do, because it's one of the things that I do kind of do for a living, which is edit video, is match that video that he's shot with the audio that's been recorded. So depending on what he's got, I haven't seen the footage yet, but I think he's got everything. That'll all go onto a DVD. So there'll be a DVD available as well. But I won't put that in. There will be eventually. But when that will be, I don't know. But that will be just for people that pre-order the vinyl. So you'll get the vinyl, you'll get the CD, and you'll get a DVD as well. So that's not bad value.
For £10 or whatever the local equivalent is, that's not too bad at all.
It's not too bad at all, is it? And the DVD, there will probably be some outtakes as well, because I can remember, although I did the whole thing live, I made about 4 or 5 mistakes. So I had to sort of... Halfway through, I might have messed something up and then started again.
That's totally understandable. So why don't we go back and rewind, so to speak, past the vinyl project. How did you get into music in the first place?
Wow. Well, I was brought up with music. My mum was a keen churchgoer, and she was a member of the Pentecostal church. So it was one of the things when I was little that I was taken on to Pentecostal church and brought up with hymns. And that basically was one of the first introductions into music. So I'd be singing. My mum would play hymns at home. She had an electronic organ that she used to play hymns on and sing along. And I used to sing along with her and harmonise along with her. But I think my earliest memory of music was dancing. Just dancing around, listening to My Sharia Moore by Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
I remember when that... I'm not that old, but I can remember. I was probably about 3 or 4 years old when that came out, and I can still remember it. It still has an impact on me. And Gene Vincent as well. My mum and dad used to have an album by Gene Vincent and the Blue Caps. Yes, you'll have to look back in your history books, boys and girls, and find out about Gene Vincent. And listening to other music like Long John Baldry, who even I can't remember how that goes now, early Pink Floyd, and also the Jackson 5. When Jackson 5 used to have they used to have a cartoon series on the TV. And I used to love watching that because the music was good. And also Sesame Street. Sesame Street has some great music in it as well. So those sort of like early stuff. Always had a guitar. It used to be a tennis racket. Then I actually did get a guitar and play guitar for ages. And then when I was 14, I moved on to bass and played bass, not exclusively, but played bass quite a lot for the next sort of 20 years or so. And I still love to play bass, but then kind of came back to playing guitar again and singing. Well, I've only actually been writing music and singing for about the last 10 years.
So when did you get your first guitar?
I've probably been about 5 or 6. Yeah, 5 or 6. I got it from Woolworths. I can remember.
So you've played guitar. Now you've you graduated to playing bass, and you know it was a long time ago. So tell us a bit about when did you get serious about music?
I've always been serious about music. since I was at school, basically, I've never had a career. I've always wanted to make a living out of being a musician. I haven't got close to it yet, and I've been doing it for donkey's years. I really have been doing it for donkey's years. So I've always wanted it. I've always had the hunger for doing it. There was a couple of years during my first marriage that it didn't quite work out. I wasn't really doing music, but then I wasn't really doing anything in my first marriage. Actually, when I immigrated to Australia, and I gave it up when I went to live in Australia, and then I took it up again. I sort of left it for about a year. I was in Australia for about a year, 18 months, and then came back and discovered it again. But yeah, I've always been serious about it. I've always been passionate about music, and yeah, that's it really. I've never had a proper. I have sort of been that person that's gone from job to job just to pay for guitars, rehearsals, strings, things like that.
So you have had day jobs. You're not just down by the key, you know, singing for your supper.
No. I've always. I had a period when I wasn't working. When I came up work, so I looked after my daughter for 4 years. When I left my wife and looked after my daughter for 4 years, and so I did a lot of playing then, because I didn't go out, I didn't have any money. So yeah, I've always had a day job, just because I needed to pay bills. But you never know. You never know what will happen. There's always lots of interesting things on the horizon. I'd like to say I've never given up hope, but I have, because I think there must be a lot of musicians out there who've been at it for a while. It's a long slog. If you want to be a professional musician, if you want to sort of do what I do for a living, it's a long, hard slog. And some weeks are good, and it only takes one bad gig to make you think, oh God, am I wasting my time? But I've invested too much of my life into this to say, oh no, I'll give it all up and go and become a banker or something.
There must have been some good gigs because you're still going.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's because they're all good gigs. You always get something out of it, even if it's just a bad taste in your mouth. I did some gigs last year. There's one in particular. You know, we all play rough places where it doesn't matter who you are, you'd have gone down badly, you know. When you've got to compete against drunks and drunks and junkies, it's never a good gig. not unless you're playing Wonderwall. If you play Wonderwall, will definitely soothe the savage beast, because that's what people want. They get drunk. Oh no, can you play Wonderwall? Can you play Wonderwall, mate? But no, I mean, I must say I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky with gigs, because apart from that one gig last year, that one particular gig I did last year, which is one of probably about 30 gigs I did last year, they've all been brilliant, and they've all been great this year. And I've got a new manager, so I've got loads of gigs, lots of really nice gigs in London, which is what I wanted. So yeah, everything's looking good.
Tell us about the live music scene where you are. How does that sit with you?
Well, it's a bit of a strange one, actually, to tell you the truth. I lived in London for a long time, and I've moved down to a place called Eastleigh, which is near Southampton. And I was really into the scene down here, because there's quite a nice little scene. But having been around this scene now for a little bit, it can do you in. And it's not the artists, it's the audiences. I don't know where, you know, there are sort of idyllic places that you can play where you can actually go and play in a nice venue to lots of people that you haven't had to invite, that aren't your mates, that you can play your own songs that you wrote yourself and people will appreciate it. They're very few and far between. There's lots of open mics, which is like a modern day karaoke, really. It's the sort of thing that venues... Not even venues, to be honest with you, Eric. They're just pubs. They just want to get people in. So they go, oh, yeah, have one of these open mic things in, because people will come down and play, and then they expect you to bring people with you. They want you to do the work of marketing the gigs for you. Gigs for them. So, yeah, there's not many of these gigs around here, so I've had to go back to London again. So I've got a lot of gigs in London, which is about 65 miles away from me. So I'm doing a lot of gigs up in London, because there are places where people go because they have good music. They go, oh, let's go to so-and-so tonight, because, you know, oh, yeah, they always have good music down there. That doesn't happen in Southampton. There's lots of cover bands, lots of tribute bands, and lots of celebrities that have won or have been part of a game show and have got some kind of notoriety out of it. Whether it's, I mean, I did a gig last year, which was I was playing support for a girl that had come fifth or something in a Big Brother competition.
Oh no.
You know, I went down there because I thought, I'm going to get to play in front of a big audience. She brought a dozen people and didn't fill the place at all. It was a barn of a place. So I kind of learned my lesson there. But then there's guys that have come down here that have been part of the X Factor, and people have loved them. And they've charged huge fees, like £3,000. £3,000, and they played for 15 minutes. To a backing tape, and they weren't very good, but people will still come and see them because it's because they're a celebrity. So these kind of things you fight against, but when you get a good audience and a good crowd, then you're flying.
And so tell us about your most memorable gig, and not the one where the bloke comes up and goes, "Can you play Wonderwall?"
Wow, most memorable gig. I'll tell you, I played not that long ago in Southampton, funnily enough, a place called the Orange Rooms. I did a gig there. It was an open mic. A lot of these open mics that you book up, you kind of rock up about 8 o'clock, and I'd hung around for about an hour and a half. The guy in the venue had said, "Oh yeah, we'll put you on later on. Just come in and do." And I was going to go on and do three songs, and I got two encores. The whole crowd, there's probably about 150 people in there. A nice young crowd, like late teens, 20s crowd, and everyone dancing around, everyone getting into the music, and they really loved it. So for me, that was a memorable gig. Because I come out of there thinking, yeah, this is great. I'm reaching people, and people are getting what I'm doing. So yeah, that was a very memorable gig.
Awesome. What inspires you when it comes to your songwriting? Where do you get most of your good ideas?
To be honest, I get a lot of my good ideas when I'm drunk. I gave up lots of things without getting into too much detail about 6 years ago. And those sort of things used to help me basically writing the words is the thing that I find the most difficult. I can sit here, if you can't see, I've got I've got two guitars. I've got a 12-string, I've got a Spanish guitar, I've got an acoustic bass, and I've got a sitar in here. And I can pick up any of these instruments, and I can give you a completely original song straight off the top of my head now. No problem at all. And I'll sing it for you and whatever. It's the bits afterwards. It's the writing the words. That's the sort of thing that gets me, because I don't like to write obvious lyrics. I like to write lyrics that can apply to everybody, that are kind of hidden. You have to sort of think about it a little bit more.
Yep.
So I don't like this. We're doing this. You're doing that. I'm over here. You're over there. This is what we're doing. Explain everything away, because a lot of my songs are about things that people don't necessarily get straight away. There's a song called "Don't Make Me Wait," which people have said, "Oh, it's a really lovely song. I really like that song. It's a lot of people's favourites." What they don't realise, it's actually about a stalker who was in my house that I couldn't get rid of. And I had to literally take them by the arm and take them out of the house, physically, bodily, take them out of the house to get them out of my flat at the time. So although it might sound like a really nice song, if you listen to the lyrics, then you realise, actually, what's going on here? It's not quite right. So the things that inspire me for lyric-wise are things that have happened to me, things that have happened to other people, and some stuff that I make up. And some songs are a mixture of all three of those things. But when it comes to music, it's whatever I feel like at the time.
So I'm going to ask my famous question. It's 3 a.m. in the morning, and that's quite ironic because we've already heard the song that's called 3 a.m. And you're asleep, and you've come up with a really great idea for a lyric. What does Nick Tan do?
I've reached for my notepad, which is I'm that boring to actually have a notepad by my bed. I very rarely use it, but I have sat there. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I went writing a brand new song of mine, and just as I was going off to sleep, I just thought, oh yeah, I could write it about this. Because for me, it's coming up with a subject. Once I've got a subject to write about, then it's easy, or it's easier. So I actually had it was a Saturday. It must have been either a Friday or a Saturday night. I had a bottle of Jim Beam. So I poured a little Jim Beam, had a little sip, and then I started writing away my little book. I write a brand new song, which I love, which I'm going to play for the first time at my first gig of the year, which is on Sunday.
Awesome. So I often ask that question because a lot of people have got different ideas about how they write it down and how they record it. Some people have like a digital voice recorder. Some people don't even wake up. They just think, oh, yeah, that's a good idea, and if it's good enough in the morning, and if I remember it in the morning, I'll write it down. But you're old school.
Yeah, well, I've forgotten too many good songs.
So,
because I wrote one a couple of weeks ago, and I wrote the lyrics down for it, and it took me a long time to get around to writing this song, and it was painful to write because it was really hard work, and I lost the lyrics, and I can't remember any of them.
So if you're writing something down, Nick, does that prompt you to write more things down, get the creative juices flowing? Do you sort of find yourself finishing off songs once you've started to write?
Yeah, I'm pretty good at things like that, actually. Although sometimes I've written stuff and I've looked at it and gone, nah. And I might have written verses and verses of it and thought, nah, I don't like that. Or I use my wife. I play stuff to her and she's like, if it's good, she'll say it's good. If it's not good, she'll just look at me and go, well, but then I normally know.
Well, it's good that you've got an inbuilt test audience there.
Oh, yeah, that's the best, really. So when I know I've got it right, then, you know, that's fine.
And if she really likes it, well, that means you're onto a winner, it must be.
Yeah, and I've actually resurrected songs that I thought, oh, I don't really like that song anymore, I won't play it. And she'll go, no, I really like that song. And I've gone, really? You really like it? But, yeah, and so I bought songs back. Don't Make Me Wait. I got bored with it. I didn't like it anymore. And she said, oh, no, it's one of my favourites. She said, that's a really good song. She said, well, so what is it about that song that you don't like? And I said, oh, I don't really like the chorus very much. She said, well, why don't you just change the chorus? So I just made a few alterations in the chorus, and then I've liked it, and it's one of my most popular songs.
Do you ever change, when you're at a gig, for instance, do you ever change the words? Do you ever forget the words? Or do you just, like, want to play the guitar a bit different? Like, you might put a different riff in or something like that on a particular night?
Depends if I've had a drink. If I've had a drink, you get a bit reckless, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, you know? You're halfway through the second verse. You think, actually, this chorus, you know what this chorus could do with? Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. I do forget the words. I forget the words, a little bit. If my wife's there, I'll kind of, sometimes I'll mouth to her, actually nowadays I don't need to. She knows when I'm supposed to be singing the second verse, and I'll look at her and she'll mouth the first line for me. So once I've got the first line, then I'm off. But I it's generally, if I've had a few beers, then it's not a good idea. I know from experience, it's best not for me not to drink at gigs. I used to. But it's not good, not a good idea, because, yeah, I can forget things. And you begin to, you sort of, I don't know, you get a little bit, well, I get a little bit sort of sloppy. But sometimes in certain environments, certain gigs, if it's a nice relaxed environment and it's more of a jam session almost, then I'll mix it up a little bit and try a few different things. Sometimes it works. Sometimes you get some really good results. And sometimes you think, well, maybe I could have done that a bit better.
So what sort of preparations, apart from maybe no beer, do you put into a gig? Do you do anything special? Any superstitions?
No superstitions at all. I like to be nice and prepared. So when I'm getting ready at home for a gig, I like to make sure I get all my music stuff done first. So I'll get my guitar. I'll always pack my guitar up first, make sure that's in there ready. I've got a little a gig bag that I take with me as well. I'm quite disorganized in my life, but some things I'm very organized about. My gig bag, I'll make sure that I've got a lead in it. I've got my strap in it. I've got some bits of paper to write on if I want to write out a set list. Or I might have written a set list out for it already. I've also got another smaller bag. This is really, I did this about a month ago, and I just it's brilliant. I play a 12-string guitar, so there's a few because it's a 12-string guitar. There's a lot of very thin strings on there, and depending on the gig, sometimes I can really bash it, and so strings can break quite easily. I use some good quality strings, so it's quite rare. But when it does happen, you can get. I don't want to be searching around in a bag somewhere for some strings and looking. So I've got this little bag, and it's got all the strings, all 12. I've got spares of all the strings in there with a little string winder, little pair of pliers. So if I break a string, I can have it fixed in about 2 minutes. So that's really nice. I just want to make sure that when I'm playing, I haven't got to be thinking, oh no, this string's broken, or oh no, this is no good, or what am I going to do next? I like to just completely immerse myself into playing, so I might like to make a good preparation to make sure that I've got everything that I need. So other than that, I don't really do anything. But I always make sure I get that done first, and then I'll get dressed and all that kind of thing, all the kind of personal, just sort of human stuff, but do the music stuff first, have the guitar packed up, everything I need, like guitar stands and things like that, already sitting by the front door, then I'll get dressed.
Can you walk into a venue and sort of determine, oh, this is what sort of night I'm going to have based on the venue, or, you know, you might have been there before?
Yep, definitely, and the audience as well. I'll go in there and I'll see who's playing first, have a look at what they're doing, how the audience is reacting to them, and then think, oh, right, the set list I was going to play tonight, that's going to work really well. Or I've gone into other places and I thought, that won't work here. I've got to do this. Like if I've got an older audience, then I can. Oh, it depends. It depends what sort of audience they are. You know, if they're an old audience that are kind of traditional kind of stuff, then some things are going to work better than others. I've just got a guitar here. I've always got a guitar here. There's a seventh chord. So it's a song. So if I play those sort of chords, that'll bring an older audience around. An audience over about 30, if they're kind of like a folky, kind of bluesy audience, they'll like that as opposed to me. If I'm doing a sort of like a really slow ballad, you know, there's a couple of ballads I do that are really quite soulful and quite deep.
Yep.
And the older audiences aren't that keen on. They don't want to be reminded of teenaged angst. They don't want to do that. I'm still writing about it, but they don't. They prefer that. They like those big seventh chords, you know. But a younger audience will like the. That's sort of more soulful stuff. But then if it's a young audience, and they're out to party, they've had a few drinks, they're having a good time. They won't want that. So it's got to be. Sort of like a little bit of the faster stuff.
Yeah.
So fortunately, I've got a different whole range of songs that I write. So sometimes it's difficult when people say to me, "What sort of music do you play?" And it depends on the audience what sort of music I play. So I can play a real like shoegazy, you know, indie kind of stuff, or I can play a bluesy, funky song. So I can sometimes play the whole lot in the whole gig, which is what I'm aiming for in this. I've got 11 gigs lined up in the next couple of months, and that's what I'm going to be doing, basically playing the whole range, which is the vinyl project. So I'm going to be basically playing the vinyl project. What I've recorded, I'm playing bar a couple of songs, a couple of little interchangeable things, just to keep it a bit more interesting. Yep. For me, a few new songs I'll put in, but basically I'll be playing the vinyl project live. So it'll be the soulful stuff to start off with, and then it'll be the bluesier stuff later on. Or it might be the other way around. It would depend on the crowd that night.
Because I know you hate comparisons, you know. Nick Tan, who do you sound like? I know you hate that sort of stuff, and I think I can understand why.
Well, I kind of. The reason I hate it is because I don't know. I mean, I play stuff, and I think, oh, wow, like, there's a new song I've got, and I think it sounds like Smashing Pumpkins. In my head, to me, it sounds like the Smashing Pumpkins. And I play it to somebody, and I think, and I say, oh, that sounds a bit like so-and-so. I go, you don't think it sounds like Smashing Pumpkins? They go, nah, it doesn't sound anything like Smashing Pumpkins. But to me, it's like, oh, that's why it's difficult to say, who do you sound like? There's a good friend of mine called Helen Austin, who's a composer, musician, and she's English, but she lives in Vancouver Island in Canada. And she said, oh, you sound a little bit like Dallas Green. And I was like, do I? Really? So I went onto YouTube to listen to Dallas Green, and I thought, yeah, there's a few of my songs that do sound a bit like Dallas Green. And that's, for me, that's really nice. That's really reassuring that I sound like somebody, because sometimes I just think maybe I'm a little bit too... it's so different that people are going to have difficulty identifying with me and getting into the music. So if there's people that other people think that I sound like, then it's like, oh, right, I'm out on my own here. I'm not sort of forging new territory, because that's not what I want to do. I just want to make a few bucks, you know. But there's a lot of musicians that go, no, I want to make loads and loads of money out of music. Look, I'm not going to throw it away. I'll be happy to pay a few bills. If I can pay my telephone bill, my electricity bill from some of the gigs that I've done, or from CDs that I've sold, then I'm happy with it, you know.
So when it comes down to that sort of thing about sharing your music online and promoting your music online, what boxes do you tick? Having that previous conversation in mind, do you find it difficult sometimes with some of these online sites?
A lot of the time, yes, but there's been a few developments in the last couple of months that I've noticed. Because I've been doing this online business for quite a few years. Acoustic is now a genre. Singer songwriter is now a genre. It never used to be.
That's one I don't understand. There's a lot of people who are singer songwriters. It doesn't really narrow it down.
Well, no, but at least it gives you a little bit. It gives you a box to tick, and that can be quite useful when you're sitting there going, "I don't know who I sound like. I haven't got a clue. I thought I sounded like Smashing Pumpkins, but apparently I don't."
Or that guy from Oasis.
Yeah. You know, so I mean, it's a tricky one. Is it folk? Is it, you know? It's a little bit in the eye of the beholder. Because people, I ask sort of, I don't want to say that, well, I suppose they are fans, and they go, oh, you just sound like you, Nick. And it's like, well, yeah, that's really nice of you to say that, but I'd rather you said, oh, you sound like this guy called Dallas Green, who's really popular and has made loads of money.
Have you found things getting easier or getting harder when it comes to online music promotion?
I find it easier, actually, getting much easier. I'm beginning to understand it a lot more. Especially Twitter. I never quite understood Twitter, but I'm getting the hang of Twitter now. Basically, to get Twitter to work, you've got to have a lot of followers. Otherwise, it doesn't really work. You've got to get a lot. And fortunately, I've got a lot now, because I'm kind of getting the hang of it. I think after a while, you do get the hang of it. The more you do, because you join every website, and you go to every one of those bloody sites where they go, oh, you can upload your own profile, and you can upload three of your songs and introduce everyone to you. And I've basically got everything on copy and paste. I've got little things. So then my profile goes up. I haven't got to write a new one every time. I've got it on one of my sheets somewhere. I'll just post it up there. I've got songs I've got MP3 songs up that I know what they sound like. Oh, excuse me. Pictures that I know will fit the bill. Put them up there and do it. So after a while, you realise which websites work and which websites don't, and it can be, you know, it's hard. It is a hard slog, but it keeps, you know. I don't watch an awful lot of TV. Sunday morning, I'm normally online with loads of other. I think it's podcasters and independent musicians go online on Sunday morning. First thing Sunday morning, you go on Twitter, you go on Facebook, and you see who's around. And go, yeah, all the good independent musos are online. They're all doing their Twittering, they're all doing their Facebooking and everything. So yeah, you know, we get the hang of it. Well, what we need is MySpace to die.
Yeah,
let MySpace just die, and I think the world will be a better place.
So you're not a fan of the MySpace?
Every time someone says, check out my Facebook profile, I just go, oh, please. MySpace profile. It's like, oh no. I've got three browsers I use. I've got Safari, I've got Firefox, and I've even got one called Flock. I can go onto it. I can almost guarantee it will crash my browser because they've put so much onto it. You've got this little plugin and that little plugin and this little plugin. It just doesn't work. It's awful. And also, you can have loads of people following you. You can have loads of comments, and it means nothing.
Yep.
Absolutely nothing. There are far better sites to use. I actually build sites for other people. I build simple WordPress sites for bands and for musicians, for lots of people. I build little sites for musicians, stand-up comedians, even my local hairdresser. I'm just building a simple site for her. Just a simple WordPress site. They're easy to make, just simple to make. You can put lots of stuff in it. You can have your own website on there. You can have your own .com or .co.uk or whatever. And it's a simple thing to do. And instead of having MySpace, just make your own site. Or come to me. I'll make your site really cheap.
I can understand a few years ago how it was really hard to make a website if you didn't know what you're doing. But now it's a lot easier. So, bands, there's really no excuse for you not to have your own website, yeah?
No excuse at all. No, I mean, it's simple. There's a lot of what happens is a lot of bands are sitting back, and I interviewed a band a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to them afterwards about Twitter, et cetera, and they were like, oh, yeah, we're going to get someone to do that for us. And I thought, no one's going to do that for you. Who's going to do that for you? Who's going to build your website for nothing? Who's going to do all your Twitter campaigning for nothing? What you're waiting for, and what a lot of bands are waiting for, is they're waiting for a record deal. They're waiting for a record company to come along and say, yeah, we'll do all that for you. Just sign here. They'll might make a few quid, but they won't make an awful lot. And all the people that make the money are the people that are going to be doing all their Twitter stuff for them, building all their websites, etc. And then after a while, they'll be gone. And then all they have left is a website which they won't be able to use.
Speaking of Twitter, I have to have a word to you about your Twitter jingle in your podcast. That gets stuck in my head.
Excellent. It's doing its job then.
It's not too excellent when I'm trying to sleep. Nick_10, da 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 da. Nick_10. My God, get it out already.
Excellent. Well, I like to have a bit of fun, and you know, and I thought, yeah, that'll work. Stick in your head. Other people there's another jingle I do, which is the mummy jingle.
Oh yeah, yeah, you did one for me. That was awesome.
Yeah. I used it in my last podcast, but I've got some people. I've got some listeners to do some jingles for me as well. I've got some Japanese people I've been using recently, and also the Posh Bird. I've got somebody called the Posh Bird, who's a friend of mine who's done some jingles for me, and she's causing a bit of a stir at the moment. Lots of people want to find out who she is.
So tell us a bit about Mummy and also the Posh Bird for people who don't know what we're talking about.
Well, Mummy was just like, I wanted to do, I needed to do some jingles for the podcast. And I thought, well, the thing about the podcast is I always want to push my music as well, but I don't want it to be all about my music, and it isn't. But every so often I want to gently remind people that, yeah, I do music as well, and I've got a website, and you can buy my music, and et cetera, et cetera. So I thought I want to do something a little bit interesting, a little bit funny. So I was kind of thinking of Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, some of the stuff they did on Ad Nauseam, and like the Derek and Clive stuff. And so I just kind of busked it, really. I did it in about two or three different takes. But yeah, about two or three takes. It's just an Apple loop, piano piece, and just somebody going, "Mummy,
yes, dear,"
and it was that kind of idea. So it's just to promote the website.
Mummy, yes, dear. Mummy, I think I've just been bitten. Bitten. Yes, Mummy. I think I've been bitten by Urk FM. Oh, my God.
And Posh Bird, I must admit, I nicked her. There's another podcast called Hot Potatoes, which has just started. It's only had one episode, but before that, there was another podcast called Watch Your Mothers, and I know the people from Watch Your Mothers, and I used to, and I still do. I work with them. I do the music for them. It's a comedy website, and I get a song, which is Napoleon will send me, who lives in Sheffield, he'll send me a sound file, and it'll be, right, this is this song, Nick. I want you to write some music for this song. Here it goes, 1, 2, 3, la, 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 la. And it'll be a funny song. It can be generally about disgusting things, to be honest with you, very, very disgusting things. And I'll work out what he's singing, and I'll do an audio track of guitars, basses, whatever's needed. Sometimes I've done some keyboard bits for him, sound effects and things like that. Then I send it back up to him. He'll re-record his vocal over the top of it, and it goes into the podcast. So it was Watch Your Mother's podcast, first of all, and now it's Hot Potatoes podcast, which is their brand new one. And they introduced this character called the Posh Bird, and she's a very posh bird. And she just says, this is the Posh Bird, and da-da-da-da-da. I thought, wow, that's really good. And I know her because she's part of the kind of Watch Your Mother's people, because there's a site called watchyourmothers.net, and we all comment on that. It's a blog about TV. And I thought, oh, I can use her. And so I sent her an email saying, do you fancy doing some stuff for me? And she said, yeah, no problem. So I sent her some scripts, just little, tiny little scripts of things to say. And so she's been sending me some stuff. I'm actually going to see her tomorrow, and she's going to record a couple more for her. I can play you one, actually. Shall I play you one?
Yeah, go for it.
Here we go. You should better hear this. Oh, it's going to open up there. Never mind. Here we go. This is live podcasting for you, folks.
Is.
Hello, this is that Posh Bird again. For more information on who has been played on the podcast, simply go to isthisthingonpodcast.com. Can you do that? Good.
So she does stuff like that. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I can sort of imagine her being one of those children's television hosts.
Yeah, she is. She does.
Hello, I'm a Posh Bird, and you're listening to Nick Tan's Is This Thing On podcast.
There you go.
Awesome. So let's talk about the podcast, as we just heard from the Posh Bird. Is This Thing On? Absolutely awesome name for a podcast. How did you come up with it?
I don't know.
Oh, come on, Nick. There has to be a better story than that.
No, there's no story. I just thought, what can I call this thing? It's about independent music. It's about playing gigs and stuff like that. So what kind of goes with that? And it was basically just thinking of a microphone, hitting a microphone and going, hello, is this thing on? And that was basically it. It's as simple as that. No big story. Just thought of it there and then.
And then,
sorry.
No, that's all right. And, of course, I know a few people have used that. I know I've thrown that at you a few times and giving you some promos and stuff. So, no, it's really effective.
Yeah, there are actually a couple of other podcasts called Is This Thing On, believe it or not. I was most dismayed to find that out. There's about four or five of them, but most of them aren't current anymore, but they still come up on YouTube, on iTunes.
So how did you discover music podcasting and podcasting in general, first of all?
I can't remember how I first thought about it. It was I started doing it in 2009. It was one of those things that I just thought another idea to promote myself, it was basically. And the first three, I think maybe the first three or four or five were just about me. The first three were me and my wife just chatting about music and gigs and stuff. I must admit, I haven't heard them for a while. I might go back and listen to them. And I just thought, oh. And then I started getting into the music scene down here. And I started meeting different people, different musicians. I thought, oh, these are brilliant people. I was like, oh, have you got anything I can listen to? And so I started downloading their tracks and they give me stuff. And then I started playing their music. And then I thought, you know what? I could do this podcast, right, where I just play all these people's independent music. And then, oh, no one's ever thought of this. This is a fantastic idea. This is so original. And so I was doing it for a while, and then I was approached by Graham Holland from the Acoustics, from the Frog's Life.
Yep.
He said, "Oh yeah, there's an Association of Music Podcasters." I was like, "What? There are more people? How dare they?" There's me thinking I was creating this brand new thing, and not only were more people doing it, they'd cheekily formed themselves into an association. So I kind of thought, oh, well, that's quite good. I mean, my podcast is slightly different because I only play stuff that people send me. And I know there's a few podcasters that do the same, but some people use there's a couple of different websites, aren't they? I can't remember what they're called, that you can go and you can download stuff to play on podcasts. But I've stuck with the with people sending me their own tracks, because one, it gets me over this Creative Commons thing, which I don't really understand, to be honest with you. And I think, well, if someone sent me their own track and said play it, that can't be illegal, can it?
No.
I can't be anything wrong with that. Plus I get to have, I've formed lots of really good relationships with some of the artists, with a lot of the artists that have sent me stuff. Matt Stevens, like, I met him, I'll see him on Sunday at a gig. There's a lot of people, and yeah, it's been great. I've got a mailing list. I've got a Google group of all the artists. There's over 102 artists that are on the mailing list, that are on the Google group for the artists, which is brilliant. So I can put stuff up on there and put a few things out, tell people about new things that are happening and things that we can do for them, get albums reviewed and stuff like that. So yeah, it's brilliant.
I know that I've heard a lot of good music on your show, but there must be some that haven't quite made it.
Yes, I have played some. There are a few tracks that I just listen to and think, nah, nice try, but no. I mean, it's been suggested to me before, why don't you play some of these tracks? And it is tempting, but I don't want to ridicule people for making an effort, for doing stuff. Some stuff also just isn't for me. It's not. I play a big range of stuff. I think quite a wide range of stuff, but some stuff just isn't quite right for the podcast. But some stuff's just not very good. I must say though, of all the stuff I've been sent, and I've got three folders in my podcast file, and it's jam packed full of stuff. I'd probably say the stuff that's not good quality, that's like amateurish, really amateurish, it's probably about 1%. The other stuff that I haven't played, I just think, I don't like it. I don't like this track. It's okay, nothing wrong with it, but not for this podcast, not for what I want to do, because I just want to play stuff that I like, which is fair enough, I think.
And so how do you decide what you're going to play on a particular week? Do you have themes or anything like that?
Well, not really. No, I mean, I get sent stuff. I used to put a lot of stuff out on Twitter saying, send me your tracks, and the same thing on Facebook, and also on LinkedIn. Do you know LinkedIn?
I know LinkedIn, but it's not really for me.
Right, okay. It's really useful. When I put a thing out on LinkedIn, I got loads of stuff. That's when I got my biggest, like, I probably got about 50 tracks from LinkedIn from different musicians, independents out there that sent me a lot of stuff. That's when I really, it was number 15 on the podcast. The 15th podcast was when it really kicked off, when I thought, right, let's do this properly, because I used to do it once every couple of months. It was only, it went once a week at number 15. And that's when I got a big influx of stuff. I generally get maybe about three emails a week of people sending me stuff. But I've got a huge big backlog of stuff that I've yet to play, and some stuff that I I'm happy to play, you know, from a year ago. Normally 3 months. 3 months will go by and I'll play another song again, unless it's a favourite track. I mean, I've got some tracks that I think are just fantastic, and some I've played about 3 weeks, in between. One track in particular, I played it, and then I played it 3 weeks later and went, I know I played this a few weeks ago, but it's brilliant. Just listen to it again.
Do you have any standout artists that you've played?
Yeah.
Drop some names.
Definitely. Right, let's have a look. Well, April, maybe May, is my band at the moment. They got a track called Sugar and Mess, which I think is one of the best tracks. Probably the best track I've been sent, to be honest with you. I think it's fantastic. I just love it. Love it to bits. I think it's just brilliantly written by a guy called Matt Cassell, and it's sung by it might be his girlfriend, I'm not too sure, I can't remember her name either, and he wrote it for a woman, so he wanted to write from a woman's point of view, and it's just beautifully arranged. It's lovely, lovely tune. You can tell I like it, can't you?
Yeah.
Matt Stevens, love playing Matt Stevens tracks, because he's a good friend of mine, and I love his stuff. What else we've got? Helen Austin, love her stuff, quirky, kind of ukulele based, a lot of it. She gets a lot of her songs placed onto American TV, shows like One Tree Hill, etc. She gets a lot of stuff put on there, nice quirky stuff. Cherry Blue Storms, American band, brilliant band. Sound a little bit like Pretenders, old school Pretenders. Band called the Wilton Project, also very good. A Scottish band called Vendor Defender, brilliant band. Liz Longley, oh, fantastic. Girl's just an amazing artist. Really, really fantastic songs. Who else? Ex Libra, so ex drummer from my band, another brilliant band. I've played them a few times. Let me think. There's a good band called Alligator Indian that are quite good. Oh, and Sand River, a very excellent band, very good band from up north of England.
Yes, you introduced me to the Sand River.
Oh, I think you've interviewed them, haven't you?
I have. Absolutely awesome guys.
Yeah, really, really good. King Never as well. Great American band. Really, really great band. Nice, good, earthy rock music. And Schnauzer. Have you heard of Schnauzer?
I might have heard them on your show, but I haven't played them yet.
Yeah, oh yeah. Everything Is Nice is a really good track of theirs. And well, quite an unusual, sort of quirky little band. Very idiosyncratic, they might say.
Have you found that the podcast has helped your music personally?
It's helped me make a lot of contacts and make a lot of good friends. I don't think it's resulted in any it has resulted in a few sales. There's a couple of guys that I follow the podcast that have bought my album. Quite a few people I know that have bought artists LPs. I know that LPs. Listen to me, my vinyl thing.
Old school.
Yeah, I know a lot of their albums. I've had a few sales out of it. Yeah, but I mean, I've got to the stage now where it's one of the things I just kind of do it. I just enjoy it. I enjoy the feedback, and I enjoy doing it. Some weeks I just think, oh, I don't really feel like doing it, but then you go, oh, okay, you just do it. The last two podcasts, I think I've enjoyed the last two more than any of the others. I did the last one with my daughter just sitting next to me, we were having a bit of a laugh about that. We had a good giggle about Music X-Ray, because I sent one of my songs off to them to be reviewed in there. They do a forum, it's musicxray.com, and I got the results back and some of the comments on the forum. Yeah, if you're thinking of getting your stuff done on there, just think again.
Yeah,
have a listen to the podcast number 75.
Tell me briefly that story, because I actually did listen to episode 75. It was quite hilarious.
Yeah, well, they do a Music X-Ray is a website that do lots of things. Another one of these things, they upload your profile and upload your tracks, all this kind of bullshit. And then there's a thing that they gave me a free voucher you can form your own, get your own forum, and of people, not your own, but you know their people, get a track. This group of people listen to your track, and then they make comments on it. And so, you know, you pay for this, and the people that are reviewing it, they get paid for it as well. And so, as it was for free, I thought, well, I'll give it a go. So I sent up one of my commercial tracks. One of my tracks that's made me the most money, actually, which is How Can It Be Wrong, which I was talking about earlier on. Some of the replies were just brilliant, just brilliant. So yeah, that was quite a laugh to do. And I did a Twitter question as well. I sent the thing out on Twitter. What have you lost that you'd like to get back? And I got a big response from Twitter. You know what it's like? Sometimes you can sort of say something on Twitter and no one will reply at all. And then sometimes you can say another sort of innocent thing and get loads of responses.
Yep.
And so I did. So I thought, I'll put that in the podcast. So, you know, everything's content.
Awesome. So to finish up, Nick, what does the future hold for Nick Tan?
Well, as far as podcasting goes, I'm just going to keep on keeping on, really. It keeps getting picked up by people. So there's a few places like netradiouk.com that it gets streamed out on there every Tuesday night. It's on a couple of apps, and there's another place called Radio Dentata in America that plays the podcast there. So I've been offered to do some live stuff, but to be honest with you, I haven't got the time. But that's going on. There's going to be a CD for sale coming up very shortly from the podcast, which is a sampler, which is basically to raise money to give me a few quid to pay for some of the servers and some of the expenses that I have for that. I've had 13 of the artists that regular contributors to the podcast. They've basically given me a track to put on a CD, and I'm going to sell it as just a straight CD, no artwork, just writing on it and whatever. So that's as far as that goes. As far as I'm concerned, I've got loads of gigs to do. I've got a new manager who's doing some great work for me, getting me some nice gigs. I've got loads of gigs in London. I've got the vinyl project to sell, and should be going into the studio. It was scheduled for May, but I actually haven't written all the material yet. And also because of the gigs, I'm going to be busy doing gigs. So probably be the summer I'll be recording a new album. Yeah.
Awesome. One of the things that I do like about your podcast is because you are a musician, you've got some credibility, whereas I can't play an instrument to save my life. So that is one of the good things, and you always end your podcast with one of your own tracks, which is cool as well. Do you ever find yourself running out of tracks that, you know, I've played this one to death, or I've played that one to death, or I need a new one?
Not really, no, because I always think to myself, look, someone could be listening to the podcast for the first time, and they might not have heard this track that you played 6 months ago, so I'll play that. Or I'll play a new track. Can I just have one thing that I've completely forgotten on the podcast, which is Paul Lane from Unplug the Jukebox. Unplugthejukebox.com is a blog that's run by Paul Lane. He reviews albums, and every week he comes in brings in some tracks and does a review of an album, a local band, or it could be a band from anywhere that sent him a track. So I can't forget to mention Paul. He's my buddy.
Don't forget your buddies.
He's also my manager as well, so I've got to keep on the good side of him.
Awesome. So one last question before we ask you where to find Nick Tan on the internet. I know you're a married man and everything like that, but does being a musician help with the chicks? Come on, be honest.
What do you think I'd do it for?
Only the hard questions.
Always, always, always been. And it's always got to be guitar. Drummers can do, but you can't drum in a bedroom with a girl there, you know?
Yeah.
No. Guitar's the way forward. Guitar's the way forward, guys. Definitely.
Well, you've heard it from a man who would be an expert on the matter rather than me. Nick Tan, it's been an absolute pleasure. How can we find you and the podcast on the interweb?
You can find me at nicktan.co.uk. You can find the podcast on isthisthingonpodcast.com, or you can find it anywhere. Just Google me, Nick Tan. It comes up somewhere. Find me on Facebook. Also, I am on Twitter, you know.
Nick_Tan. Nick_Tan. That'd be the one, because you couldn't get Nick 10 because some guy from America took it.
Yeah, he's at the .com as well. It's the same guy.
Oh, no.
He's a graphic designer, the swine.
Oh, no. So, Nick, thank you very much, mate. It's been a lot of fun. If you want to find out more information, go find Nick and tell him that Oak said hi. I won't ask you, Nick, to play the guitar that ends the show, because that's a bit more hard than what you could possibly do, but it's all good. Thanks for joining us, mate, and thank you.
Thank you, Oak, and just a quick hello to my brother Richard, who lives out in Sydney. Good day, Rich. He's an Australian now. He's got his citizenship now, the splitter.
So he's not going back?
He's not coming back. You can have him.
It's all good. Hello, Richard.
Cheers, Eric. Thanks a lot, man.
No worries. So you have been listening to Eric and Nick Tan on this episode of Eric FM. Don't forget to tune in for the regular Eric FM episode on Friday. And until then, on behalf of Nick and myself, I've been Eric. This has been ChannelEric.com. Good night, interweb.